cool silence that we don't dare speak. There's a wall between us and a river so deep. We keep pretending that there's nothing wrong. There's a code of silence and it can't go on.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt and this is Cutting Through the Matrix on January the 29th, 2009. For the newcomers, I advise you to go into cuttingthroughthematrix.com, and on that website you'll find lots of previous talks I've given in the past, which I try to give you the big picture of the big system that runs the world, showing you how it's all interrelated and how there also obviously has to be a head that guides this massive hydra. And also, look into alanwattsentinel.eu for transcripts of these talks. You can download them to your computer, print them up, and pass them around to your friends. They're written in the various languages of Europe. And this last while, I've been going on about the techniques of culture creation. I've been showing you the interfacing of the secret services, basically like CIA, MI6, and so on, who have shaped the culture since World War II to the present. They've never let up, in fact. I've also got into the overlapping, intertwining of the big foundations, and there are thousands of NGOs that work for them that will lobby governments from the NGO level to get bills passed. And then you have the foundations themselves advising the same governments on policy making. And when you start to see the pattern and the how interwoven they are, where one foundation alone can finance up to 50 or 100 other dummy or front foundations that appear to the uninitiated to be separate institutions, you can see how this whole system of globalism and interdependence has been set up, because the foundations work their magic through a massive web across the whole planet. And that's why every single nation is on board on the same track, as I like to say, at the same time. It's astonishing to read one newspaper in one country and you'd swear they had the same script writers as a politician or a leader from your own country. They're all doing the same thing and saying the same things at the very same time. That's called consensus. And if you go into the art of propaganda, they also call it public relations, it softens it a bit. That's the psychology, basically, of mass manipulation of populations. Then you realize that it's been used by the scriptwriters and the image makers behind the politicians themselves. This goes back a long, long ways, as I've tried to trace the creation of the foundations, and I went into some of the history a couple of days ago on when they started up. But you'll find connotations to them in the writings even of Weishaupt. You'll also find in the writings of Weishaupt the term world citizen, something that's now been dished out by the Rockefellers, two very high-level personages. This is all connected, and we have to go through time to understand the present. That's the whole point of it. If you don't understand the basic history, everything that you get hit with today is just a media release to you, so that you will get in a frenzy, or you'll get angry or bitter, but never really realize the power behind it, what's really doing it, why is it put out there. And remember when I said that the technique of persuasion from revolutions onwards to Bernays propaganda was to do with the media. The media are the ones who make you upset by what they dish out to you. It also conditions you. Back in a moment after these messages. We'll be right back. I am Alan Watt, and this is Cuttings with Matrix. When you skip through the bizarreness of today's media, with its incredible stories of horror and happiness and trivia and sex, all mixed together, a combination which is understood to put people into the twilight zone in a sense, because pain and pleasure and horror affect the very base portions of the brain where all things come from. These techniques are involved in sadomasochism, and they're well understood in psychological warfare. The public today have been truly mind-bombed. They've also been incredibly desensitized to true horror when it's mixed with incredible fiction and trivia. Everything becomes a bizarre circus, and while you're watching the circus, it's as though you're on LSD, because that's the effect they want you to have or to experience, the surrealism of it all. And when 9/11 happened, I said on a radio show that the hardest thing now will be to hold on to your sanity as we go through the changes, which I knew were coming. Great revolutions in the past have always been preceded by speeches that torched off the revolution. The speeches in themselves contained terms in which the initiates who'd been trained for revolution understood that was the time for it to be. In fact, that's the term they often used, as now is the time. Sometimes they say the time is now. And you'd understand as well when Bush Sr. gave his New World Order speech, about a New World Order coming into view, he was giving the signal of an upcoming revolution. And we don't understand that 9/11 and what's happened up until the present time and what's accelerating today into the globalist society is a revolution. It's under the guise of terrorism. That's only one part of it. But if you notice, a whole bunch of laws on the economy, ecology, and all that college entails has been rammed down everyone's throats across the whole planet. And man himself, apparently, is the enemy of the world. All sparked off by 9/11 and rampaged on like a stampede up until the present, and it's not stopped. It's got a long ways to go. In fact, the speeches given right after 9/11 were really speeches by the high initiates, you might say, who came out, the well-known figures that came out, and immediately before the dust settled, they said, Ben Laden did this. They're the high initiates. They knew this was a sign for the big change. I said a long time ago, too, that Bretton Woods, that set up the financial system up until the present, was part one, and I read parts of the maker of that whole policy for Bretton Woods, John Maynard Keynes, who talked about a world to come that he wouldn't see in his lifetime, but it wouldn't be that far off, where people would work basically in service to the world society. I've quoted from the Anglo-American Establishment and Tragedy and Hope, by Professor Carl Quigley, who had the records and the histories of the CFR in America and the Royal Institute for International Affairs in Britain, where they also talked from the very beginning of that particular part of their agency, because they had other names before Cecil Rhodes came along, but from that time on, they kept talking about a world they'd bring in where everyone would be in service to that world. Service comes from the same root source as a serf. We have to understand that, and Professor Quigley himself said the new system that would come in would take the guise of a new feudal system, where the CEOs of international corporations would be the new feudal overlords. But you have to understand how feudalism worked, because the overlords were not the ones at the top. They worked for a king. And that's how this world system will be set up. You can tie that in with all the revolutions from the US Revolution onwards, because there really is a continuum of revolutions, and people have no idea today. The revolution was continuous throughout the world, right up into about World War I. I've also read from various sources that catalogued the different agencies that were involved in revolution. They were professional revolutionaries. And how it's documented that Thomas Paine was one who was sent from England, who was trained in revolution. And after the US Revolution, he went over to France to get it going there to help. And eventually, the slaughter got so bad in France with the beheadings that even he began to complain about the excesses, and he was put in prison. He was eventually gotten out by his friends back in the US. But it didn't stop there. Many revolutionaries came along after him, and they were professionals. They had no problems discussing the fact that they belonged to Masonic lodges, and it's well known. And some of the Masonic lodges, they published articles themselves in their own books that they were an ideal vehicle for revolution, because they were organized societies outside of the church system. They probably were the only organized societies outside the church systems, outside of just the elite circles. And they were also sworn to secrecy, so therefore anything that happened in the lodge stayed in the lodge, anything that was said. Trotsky himself, in his own book called My Life, said that he was initiated in prison into the Masonic Lodge, and that he'd come up so high in it in a short time, and he was so impressed with it that he began to write what he called the best series or compendium of Freemasonic works ever written. I don't think he came out with it because he had to get out of Russia. He was escorted out, in fact, and he was eventually assassinated by an assassin that was sent after him. Maybe he was going to spill too much. But you can go back even to the so-called Illuminati. It's on everybody's lips. They love the Illuminati term. And of course, there's a lot of nutcases out there that really truly believe they're in it. But the true Illuminati were the Illumined Ones. There's no doubt about it. They had overcome religion completely. And as Nietzsche was to say, if God is dead, how would you now behave in a world where God is dead, as opposed to how you'd behave in a world where God was the master? Your whole outlook changes. The way you view the entire world and everything in it changes. You have no guilt. You have no fear. All the laws that inhibited you are gone. The sky is the limit. You could do what you wanted to do. And that's exactly what people like Weishaupt came up with. Weishaupt was, in a sense, the Bernays of his time. He was one of many. And there's no doubt about it, there's a much bigger organization behind Weishaupt than just himself, starting it. He was well funded from the beginning. And you have to look into and do your homework and find out which little kingdom took him in when he had to vamoose. And they gave him a lifelong pension until he died. Why would they give him a pension when his system supposedly was going to overthrow all the systems of the world? You tie that in with Cecil Rhodes' ambition and when they literally financed the revolutionary movements across the world with young Turks, young Italians, and so on, who were meant to overthrow their existing orders at home. You tie that in with ambitions of Weishaupt, and they're pretty well the same. World citizenship, the world run by a natural aristocracy, the same term that Benjamin Franklin used. The world citizens and the world citizenship awards are given out by Mr. Rockefeller still today from the Council on Foreign Relations. These things are all tied together. You look at how Weishaupt set up his meetings to track people into them. He was the first one to use, this is from the book, on proofs of a conspiracy by John Robison, Robison, R-O-B-I-S-O-N, written in 1798. And he talked about a German union. Now remember, the Lodge of Yale is basically taken after the Bienen Order that was started up by Weishaupt, the Order of the Bees. And he used the beehive and the bee as a symbol, as Napoleon did too. The same symbol down through all the revolutions. It was a high Masonic system, the hive representing the perfect order of society. That's what they used for it. You have to understand too that people were ripe for revolution. And if you want to take the world off in a particular direction, but you mustn't, and you must use the people beneath you to fight for you, for what you want. You must make sure that those who follow are given a different story, a different version of where you're taking them. This has been used time after time down through all revolutions and wars. It's interesting too that Weishaupt gave the name himself called Spartacus after a slave in ancient Rome who led a rebellion. So they saw themselves, these particular illumined ones, as slaves of a kind. Slaves to what? They were the intellectual slaves of those who ruled by money and power. Back with more after this break.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
I'm Alan Watts, and we're back cutting through the matrix, tying up some of the ends in history that dangle away because people avoid them, and especially the regular historians who, as Quigley said himself, generally work for the CFR, or the Royal Institute for International Affairs, and they always manage to omit their own implications in history, and they've kept themselves pretty quiet from the public until recently, when they come out openly on television and state that they draft up policies to be signed into law for governments such as the unification of the Americas. It's quite fantastic to see this operation. And you see different members of the CFR, like Mr. Rockefeller, financing about half a dozen or so different sounding groups, but all to do with the unification of the Americas as well. These characters are dedicated to their task. And you must ask yourself, how come they're so dedicated? They never retire. They never lose enthusiasm. You can only find this in a religious order, this kind of zeal. It isn't for money. They have all the money they'd ever need. And you can go back to Weishaupt again. As I say, he used reading rooms. It's interesting, too, that the communist system was taught across Europe in reading societies right up into the 20th century. And here he is doing this in the 1700s. He talks about the trick to get fanatics in on his side who would truly believe in a just cause. You must use those people. And he says, you can't imagine what respect and curiosity my priest degree has raised. That's what they did in Masonry. They give fancy new degrees, and that would intrigue other Masons to come to certain lodges to find out these new degrees, these higher ones, especially the ones with incredible sounding names that were very pumped up. Everybody wanted to get higher and higher in degrees and get great titles of that degree. So guys like Weishaupt dreamed them up, literally. So he came up with a priest degree. And he says here on page 86 of Proofs of Conspiracy by Robison, he says, this is from his letters of Weishaupt. reason, which is wonderful, a famous Protestant divine, a high Protestant follower, who is now off the order, that's the order that Weishaupt created, is persuaded that the religion contained in it is a true sense of Christianity, because that's how they presented it to him. He says, "O man, O man, to what mayest thou not be persuaded?" In other translations, it will say, "What can you not be made to believe?" He said, "Who would imagine that I was to be the founder of a new religion?" They understood the humans perfectly back in his day. As I say, they understood how to use what Bernays would call propaganda. On page 91 of Proofs of Conspiracy, he says, this is about one of his members here, "After labouring 4 years with great zeal, he was provoked with the disingenuous tricks of Spartacus, and he broke off with all connections as one of the members with the society in 1784, and sometime after published a declaration of all that he had done in it." This is one of the defectors out of the system. "This is a most excellent account of the plan and principles of the order, at least as he conceived it, for Spartacus had much deeper views, and shows that the aim of the order was to abolish Christianity and the all-state governments of Europe, that was to come afterwards, and to establish a great republic, a whole community, a European Union. But it's full of romantic notions and enthusiastic declamation on the hackneyed topics of universal citizenship." That's what's been dished out right now by the Rockefellers, as I say. How can these all be coincidences? Or is it one long thread? Then he goes on to say, "And liberty and equality." It says here, "Spartacus gave him line and allowed him to work on." So Spartacus basically indoctrinated these ardent followers and used them. And it says that here, "knowing that he could discard him when he chose." There's so much in the book. One of Weishaupt's letters contains this: "Nothing would be more profitable to us than a right history of mankind. Despotism has robbed them of their liberty. How can the weak obtain protection?" Now, he didn't care about the weak, you understand. This is what they had to preach to their fellow men to get them on board for revolution. "Only by union, you see, and this is rare. Nothing can bring this about but hidden societies. Hidden schools of wisdom are the means which will one day free men from their bonds. These have in all ages been the archives of nature and of the rights of men, and by them shall human nature be raised from her fallen state. Princes and nations shall vanish from the earth." So all nations were to be abolished. "The human race will then become one family, and the world would be the dwelling of rational men." So he also gives a lot of things out that were actually used in the French Revolution. There's no doubt were copied after Weishaupt's lodge. Now remember, too, his lodge kept spreading like wildfire, even after the basic declarations were found and brought to the courts of royalty. These lodges had already taken off, and there were some in the US at the same time. Washington admitted that back after this break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt, and this is Cutting Through the Matrix. Going down through time to link the pieces together, because you'll find it's one continuous piece, basically. And before I continue with Weishaupt, I should mention that in Tragedy and Hope, Professor Quigley does give one of the best writings I've ever seen on the economy and banking in itself. He goes through the different types of banking systems there have been in the past, and he goes right up into the stock market traders, the ones who deal with liquidity and so on. And this ties in with all of this, because you find those that were involved in revolutions, like Albert Pike was too. He said he'd told his followers in his own book, Morals and Dogma, that we shall have to, by our own ingenuity and cunning, go into basically the acquisition of money, vast amounts of money. This is by using the stock market as well, until we become masters over the masters of the world. Now, Weishaupt's whole intention, if you were to believe it, was to overthrow all systems of government and the existing systems of banking too, and monarchy. And yet, when you go down through time and follow tragedy and hope, you find a bunch in England planning a world society, beginning with the English-speaking peoples, a federation of the world that they'd take over bit by bit, and once they'd done that, they'd then take the same systems into the rest of the world, and they set it up and they pulled it off. Because that's what we're under now. That's what we're going into, is this last phase of this revolution. This current phase started in 2001. And this is a revolution we're going through. It's a revolution where science is elevated to the top. Now that's what they called, and Weishaupt called it too, reason. Reason shall triumph. And they even had a goddess of reason, which they put into Notre Dame Cathedral, after a long parade to the cathedral in the French Revolution, the goddess of reason. Today it's science. Those with this bright ability, Thomas Jefferson, who also was accused by some of the founding fathers of being a member of this Weishaupt's Illuminati, said himself that the world would come, the day would come when the natural aristocracy would rule. He was referring to those with reason, the educated scientific class. And you will find with the top masons of his era and later eras of the present, they all wanted to go down in history books as inventors, scientists. That was something they all wanted to be known for. Science, reason. Getting back to Prusa conspiracy, this is what Weishaupt says about the kingdom that we're going to bring in, this new world. It says, but alas, the task of self-formation was too hard for the subjects of the Roman Empire, corrupted by every species of profligacy. A chosen few received the doctrines in secret, but they have been handed down to us, but frequently almost buried under rubbish of man's invention, by the Freemasons. That's what he claims. Now, he was using all of the existing Freemasonic institutions to infiltrate and use for revolution. These three conditions of human society are expressed by, and then he uses Masonic terms here, they call it the ashlar. He calls it the rough, the split, and the polished stone. The rough stone and the one that is split express our condition under civil government, rough by every fetting inequality of condition, and split, since we are no longer one family, and are further divided by differences of government, rank, property, and religion. But when reunited in one family, we are represented by the polished stone. He said that the G that they use is for grace, because there are many other meanings as well, the higher up they go. The flaming star is the torch of reason. The torch of reason. That's why the French Illuminists gave you the Statue of Liberty in the United States. That's the torch of reason. Those who possess this knowledge are indeed illumined, or Illuminati. Hiram is our fictitious Grand Master, slain for the redemption of slaves. Again, there's that slave part, and his name that he adopted was Spartacus the Slave, who rebelled. The nine masters are the founders of the order. It's interesting, too, that Benjamin Franklin, when he was the ambassador to France, and he lived like a king. I have his old books here on even what he went through in a year. It's incredible, financial-wise and wine-wise, too. But he became the Grand Master of the Nine Sisters Lodge for the whole of France. The Grand Master. And he initiated Voltaire into it. He wrote about it himself in his own writings. So here's the Nine Masters, are the founders of the order. Look at the same thing with the Knights Templars. You have nine knights supposedly went into the Middle East to look for that which was lost, as they say, and dug up parts of the Holy Mount. And there's lots of books been written on it since, with the great mysteries and so on of what they found, if anything at all. But they do love these Kabbalistic numbers. Freemasonry says it's a royal art. That's what they call it, the royal art, inasmuch as it teaches us to walk without trammels and to govern ourselves. And that's what most Masons think it is. Almost like a self-improvement club when you look at yourself honestly and your position in the world. But with it comes an order. It is an order. Weishaupt also used techniques that Pythagoras used. Pythagoras was the first society to bring in women. And the women he trained up to perfection in the day's education and became the greatest wives or mistresses of those in power. That's why Pythagoras, his school was destroyed and burned down when the people caught on to what he was up to. And here's what Spartacus was doing, or Weishaupt. There's no way of influencing men so powerfully as by means of the women. It should therefore be our chief study. We should insinuate ourselves into their good opinion, give them hints of emancipation from the tyranny of public opinion, and of standing up for themselves. It was to be a women's liberation movement. But he also had in mind to separate all of the species or the genders. It will be an immense relief to the enslaved minds to be freed from any one bond of restraint, and it will fire them the more and cause them to work for us. To cause them to work for us. You see how he's using every group with zeal, without knowing what they do. They think they know what they do, but they don't know the outcome of it at all. For they will only be indulging their own desire of personal admiration. We must win the common people in every corner. This will be obtained chiefly by means of the schools, through the schools that we're setting up, and by open-hearted behavior, show, condescension, popularity, and toleration of their prejudices, which we shall at leisure root out and dispel. So bring them in first, and then get rid of their present opinions on things, and re-indoctrinate them, is what he's saying there. Every group in society was to be used, each one given a goal, which would always be a false goal, because Weishaupt knew where he was going, and no one else was to know. He says, if a writer publishes anything that attracts notice and is in itself just, but does not accord with our plan, we must endeavor to win him over or decry him. If you're on the right track, you'll be smeared. They'll smear your personality. That's standard. The communists did that too. It still happens today. And the other trick is to win them over. Now, I read an article from the Psychological Warfare Department of the Army, and they have that in there too with journalists, how to win over journalists, how to get them on board, and how they'll actually set men on them to befriend them, be their best pals, give them tips and so on, until the person feels totally obligated to write things in a very slanted way. That standard procedure which is used yet. And here's Weishaupt doing all the same stuff back then. It says here, fronts. Here's how you front groups. This is getting back to foundations and so on. A great strength of our order lies in its concealment. Let it never appear in any place in its own name. In its own name, never let it appear. Always call it something else. But always covered by another name and another occupation. You look at all the foundations, and they sound so innocent and charitable and worthy until you look at what they're doing. Almost all of them at least spend part of their money towards promoting family planning across the planet. That's a prime objective to those in power. Mr. Rockefeller himself is on Google Video talking about the necessity to bring down the population drastically. And he funds a lot of these front foundations from his foundation. Says, none is fitter than the three lower degrees of Freemasonry. The public is accustomed to it, expects little from it, and therefore takes little notice of it. Next to this, the form of a learned or literary society is best suited to our purpose. And had Freemasonry not existed, this cover would have been employed. and it may be much more than a cover. It may be a powerful engine in our hands. By establishing reading societies and subscription libraries and taking these under our direction and supplying them through our labors, we may turn the public mind which way we will. It was all to do with stuff that Bernays knew years later that was obviously well known by Weishaupt. It's astonishing to understand how they knew everything. Now, they even talked about using music and the types of music they would play to the youngsters to get them on board. Going back even further in time to Plato, he talked about music as well and the arts and drama and how it affects people and how musicians especially should be licensed by the authorities because it could provoke into revolution so easily the young. Techniques that are ancient were known by Weishaupt. He even had it worked out how to get members of royalty into it, but never let them get above a certain degree. It was all worked out. He says princes should never get beyond the Scotch knighthood. They either never prosecute anything or they twist everything to their own advantage, so they would be used for prestige. Get them on board. Then they went on to the different mysteries of the Illuminati, how they'd put it over to the public. He said that the greatest way to get people into our lodge is through a great mystery. And they would spend their lives going up to the degrees looking for the answers to the mystery. And he said, behold, there is no mystery. Well, that's still being used today by people who are raking in the cash. Eventually, you got all the charities under and the foundations under his hand. There's all the German schools and the benevolent societies at last under our direction. That's page 114. We have got several zealous members in the courts of justice. We're getting judges on board. We're able to afford to pay them and other good additions. But we have got possession of the Bartholomew Institution for Young Clergymen, having secured all its supporters. Through this, we should be able to supply Bavaria with fit priests. So they're even taking over the priesthood. From a letter from Philo, is confident, we learn that one of the highest dignities of the church was obtained from a zealous Illuminist in opposition even to the authority and rights of the Bishop of Spire, who is represented as a bigot and a tyrannical priest. Such were the lesser mysteries of the Illuminati, but there remain the higher mysteries. The system of these has not been printed, and the degrees were conferred only by Spartacus himself, from papers which he never entrusted to any person. They were only read to the candidate, but no copy was taken. That's still the same in a lot of Masonic lodges today. The publisher of the new Arbitum says that he had read them, so says Grolman. He says that in the first degree of Magus, or Philosophus, the doctrines are the same with those of Spinoza, where all is material, God and the world are the same thing, and all religion, whatever, is without foundation and the contrivance of ambitious men. The second degree, or Rex, teaches that every peasant, citizen, and householder is a sovereign, as in the patriarchal state, and that nations must be brought back to that state by whatever means are conducible, peaceably if it can be done, but if not, then by force, for all subordination must vanish from the face of the earth. Now remember, that's what he was teaching these ones. But the whole point was to put in what they saw was the natural aristocracy themselves, the scientists of their day. That was the whole point of it. Everyone who was idealistically minded would be used and given their own the propaganda to suit their own order to get everyone on board. Youngsters, women, men, didn't matter. You were each given a different version, all thinking you're going to a wonderful free world. But Weishaupt made it quite plain in his letters how he scorned most of mankind and how dull and stupid most people were. He had the same attitude, as I say, as Bernays had of the general population. And Bernays, remember, got the US to go to a war for him to save a company that paid him money. When you see people doing such things for you, would you respect them for being used, or would you despise them? They always end up despising those that they use to get to where they wanted to go. That's standard. So this book, as I say, is quite an interesting one. There's also another one from France. It's far more detailed. But this one's easily available in the West. Proofs of a Conspiracy. It's reprints by John Robison. And this one's from the Americanist Classics. I think that's who published it. Western Islands. Well worth reading. And when you look at the intrigues that were caused and the conflicts because Weishaupt again ran all sides of things. To get change, you must have conflict. Out of the conflict comes the synthesis. That's what you're after in the first place. And then you take that new synthesis and it becomes the first thesis. It begins all over again. So mankind can progress, as they call it, through scientific education to the next level and the next level and the next level, but always with conflict. As the new and the young come up, take the old ideas that haven't been there very long, and then have war with them, and out of that comes the new thesis. Communism and the Trotskyism was based on that whole theory. Thesis, antithesis, and synthesis, and then thesis once again from the synthesis. Back with more after this break. Hi folks, I'm Alan Watt. We're cutting through the matrix, just tying up a lot of the ends that they leave dangling in the history books, and showing you that the Cecil Rhodes Foundation was only a later addition to an already existing organization, which ran and hid, in fact, behind foundations. Foundations could fund their workers and help them achieve their goals. The goals were set up for a world society which would be run by nature, meaning scientists in accord with nature. If you wonder why everything is to do with nature today, it's to do with the very books that I'm reading from and the religion that's behind it, because there is a religion involved in all of this. If you want to know the signs and symptoms of the religion and nature worship, you have to read these books as well. You have to realize why we're all getting forced into a vegetarian-only world, why there was truly a war on the so-called mad cow disease to wipe out meat and scare people off it. Ask yourself why Benjamin Franklin, when he joined the order, became a vegetarian, and many others besides, and how they ranked amongst nature all of the animals of nature too, and elevated them up to supreme status, and also came out with the ideal conditions and populations of the earth in an ideal society. You couple this with the fact of the types of bankers who have taken over control of the world. Carl Quigley himself said the Bank for International Settlements was at the apex of this banking scheme, the world banking system. See how they got their money, because they were all members of these organizations. They did use the stock market. They did use their cunning, as Pike said, and they had become, and they have become masters over the masters of the world, and they run countless foundations to bypass any real democracy, and they fund all of the big NGO groups and all the greenie groups that want less people and more animals. These are the ones behind the Georgia Guidestones. These were the ones behind Jacques Cousteau, who told us what the ideal population, human population, should be. It's the same groups that fund David Suzuki of Canada, who also on national television gave the ideal population of the world At least he said how many would have to die off every day to save the world. It's the same agenda, ongoing. Different phases, doesn't stop. It's used many people with idealism in the past, with real injustices and real grievances, to fight for them, always ending up with a different system. As I said before, how many soldiers in World War II would have gone off to fight the war if they'd known that Winston Churchill was planning on a European Union afterwards, where they'd already debated before the war that to do so would mean the loss of the culture? How many American troops would have gone off to fight if they were told there'd be a union of the Americas and then they'd be unified with Europe? It wouldn't have happened. It's all done by a secret society down through the ages, using many covers, as it says in Weishaupt's own writings. Well, that's it for tonight, folks. So from Hamish, myself, in Ontario, Canada, it's good night, and your God, or your gods, go with you.